You're listening to Scratching and Thriving, a lifestyle podcast hosted by two dope professionals who are passionate about empowering people to thrive. I'm Dr. A.
And I'm Brandon. And we are two longtime friends who met about 20 years ago during undergraduate studies. And we took two different paths in life. I'm a healthcare executive and lifestyle guru.
And I'm an educator and entrepreneur.
And we are here to bring you the content that will help you thrive. Hey, Adrian.
Hey, Brandon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Hanging in there.
Good. So I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh.
I did something dumb.
Uh-oh.
I watched the news.
Okay.
So I'm glad
you're not depressed.
So I'm fighting it, really, right? So this is ridiculous. So typically, you know, I take a lot of it with a grain of salt, but I'm going to tell you a topic that really has me concerned.
Mm-hmm.
They want to take children back to school during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I guess
that's a hot topic right now.
Right. So my concern, like we talked about in episode 2, mm-hmm. and we got a lot of reviews on that one, that they mm-hmm. want us to expand on COVID and education and how education affected by the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I stand by what I said. You know, you put in 2,000 little vectors, people that transmit, children transmit more than they're affected at this point, even though the virus is morphing and now it's becoming to the point where it's now affecting children. But they're not only affected now, but they're also carrying the virus to adults. Mm-hmm. And you want to put at least 2,000 vectors in one building for educational purposes mm-hmm. when we have other options.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my concern.
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag of issues. You know, it's an issue of resources, political pressure, social pressure, economic pressures, just trying to figure out what the right solution is for all the parties involved, but keeping the kids first. It's a tough decision for parents, for schools, communities to have to make because right now there's so much unknown. There's just so much unknown about if cases will continue to rise. We assume that they will based off of the data, but how that will impact the students if they are going to school with this modified schedule of 2 days a week, which I don't understand how that necessarily mitigates the spread.
I asked the same thing because, you know, in healthcare, we've been dealing with this since it hit the states, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've changed the way we've done things. We have changed our outlook on things. We've changed the way we use our manpower. And, you know, I have questions. Do they have enough manpower to deal with the sanitation that will be needed to deal with the kids and keep them safe? Mm-hmm. Do we have the PPE in the schools to keep kids and staff? Right. So
for sanitation, like we can't personally get them. So.
Right. Because I can't find no Clorox wipes on the shelves. And then when you get them, they look at you like you're crazy and say, you only have one. Well, I want two. So that don't just mean you have one.
And it's the smallest container they've ever made.
Correct. And it's got three wipes in it. And they didn't want to charge you $10 for it.
Right.
So, you know, it's just, I have lots and lots of questions regarding that.
And then, the big question and the big concern are for access issues. You know, do all students have access to the internet? Do they have access to tablets or computers?
Correct.
And then what about the students who have special needs, who need ADA accommodations? There's a whole host of issues. What about the students whose parents have to go to work? And then they're with my mom, pop, pop, and my mom and pop, pop aren't that technically savvy. So my mom and pop, pop might say, here, sit and watch this movie or come out back and help me garden. So, you know, you don't know what the situation will be for some of the kids in the fall. The schools have their part to do. Parents have their part to do. And of course, the kids have their part to do. And so I do think this is going to be an interesting start to the year, and schools are trying to be optimistic as well as parents, but you know, we need to have this conversation.
Right. And with that being said, since let's have this conversation,
mm-hmm.
let's invite our friend Ashley on. So Thrivers, Ashley, it has been a friend of mine and Adrian's for about 20 years. So we all three went to Xavier University of Louisiana, HBCU. Ooh, ooh. That's right. XU, baby. We all went and graduated class of, well, we don't take that part. But anyway, mm-hmm. we all graduated together. And now Ashley is an educational administrator in a Texas ISD. So we wanted her to join us and give us her educational expertise. Let's welcome Ashley.
Thank you for having me.
Ashley, we want to welcome you here to Scratching and Thriving. I'd like to first say that I am actually really, really proud of Ashley. I've seen her go from classroom instructor to educator administrator. So exciting.
Thank you.
And because of your expertise and how well you've done in education, we trust your opinion. So we want to bring you on to discuss education and COVID. How does that look? So I guess we can start getting your opinion and your thoughts on the children going back to school during this pandemic. What's your opinion? What's your thoughts on that?
I think that there should not be a rush to normalcy. I think that education needs to be updated to match what students will see in the second leg and third leg of their journeys in education. And that at this time, we have a unique opportunity to bring education into the 21st century and teach children to utilize technology for educational purposes and not just to play Xbox or Roblox or any other kind of game, but to teach children on the platforms that they're most comfortable using, which is their phone, their laptop, their iPad, their tablet or whatever.
Have y'all seen a deficit in the knowledge for as far as technology between the children and their parents?
Very much so. So you have parents who are not as apt with some of the programs that we utilize, but students as young as pre-K-4 are getting on laptops and getting on tablets at school routinely, daily, or 2 to 3 times a week. And so it is built into their educational routine already. And students can tell you how to utilize the platforms. All they need parents to do is log them on and students can go for it because they already know how to use the technology.
So what you're saying is that it's so simple that sometimes we miss it.
Yes.
Okay.
Basically.
But sometimes the issues are access, right? Like just having access, whether it be internet access or if it's access to the actual technology. Is that an issue going into the fall for students? And if so, what resources do they potentially have available to them?
Most school districts have already went to one-on-one. And what that means is students have one-to-one personal devices, whether it's a tablet or a laptop. Some districts, depending on the size, have went so far as to provide students with hotspots. Some other districts have built towers to increase the Wi-Fi strength within the city so that students can log on.
So there are things in place. What you're saying is there are things in place to help the underserved, those who may not be able to afford that. Okay. Well, that's awesome.
And so parents need to make sure to ask. They need to ask if they don't have or if they don't have access to this. They need to ask the school, correct?
Absolutely, because if we're giving you an option to do virtual learning, the onus is on the school to provide you with the tools you need to get that done.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Now, y'all listening, Thrivers, listen to this. You got two well-versed educators telling y'all what to do. Okay, listen. All right, Ashley, I got another question for you.
Okay.
Now, let's say that they do agree, because, you know, right now, nobody's agreeing on what the fall is going to look like, right? Let's
yes.
just say they do agree to send all the kids back to school in person. In the planning that you've been through with your district, do y'all have a personal protective equipment plan or a PPE plan to keep the students and the staff safe?
Yes, we have a plan, but like most plans or all plans, it relies on the people who are implementing it and participating in it in order for it to be successful.
That's very true. That's very true.
I keep going back to access because I know for up here, we're up here on the East Coast, and a lot of, you know, this is the time of year when parents are required to go get school supplies. And I don't know what the school supply list look like in your district. But in our district, we have Clorox wipes, hand sanitizers, Ziploc bags, things that are difficult to find.
I was going to say, where y'all finding it?
Exactly.
I can't find none of that. I'm going to say, where you going?
Exactly.
So that's a standard school supply list. However, school districts are this year providing those sanitizing elements that would normally be supplied by the students. So the district, again, has to take the onus of, if I want you to be here, I need to provide you to. With what you need.
So, okay, question, because I'm in healthcare now, and you know, this COVID has revolutionized everything in the way we do things, the way we look at things. Who is going to be cleaning and using these sanitizing wipes and these sanitizing formulas? Because I can tell you, things in the hospital have changed. We got nurses doing a lot more than they normally would. So who has the district assigned these cleaning duties to?
Okay, so normally you would already, and students, again, as young as pre-K 3, everybody knows when you stand in line, the teacher has that bottle of hand sanitizer and they squirt it in your hand. So that's the first level of the sanitation portion. The next level is some districts have employed either additional cleaning personnel. They have employed very high level sanitizing instruments, things that don't require liquid, things that are like electrostatic virus killers and things of that nature, microbial killers.
Like those UV lights. Mm-hmm.
Yes. This has also revolutionized how we clean school buildings. Because gone are the days where you have, you know, sweet Miss Sue, who's been there 50 years with her rag and her little bucket of goodies cleaning the desk. There are standardized protocols. There are solutions that are friendly for kids. Because remember, we can't sanitize like we would in a healthcare setting because we have little ones who, and we also have students who have special needs. That they may be, you know, oral fixated where we put our hands in our mouths or we want to lick the table. So, you know, we can't use supplies that cause a reaction. So we have to be very strategic in what schools use to clean.
Okay, so let's change the subject just a little bit because I'm curious about this. Mm-hmm. Give me your opinion on online learning. How do you feel about that overall? Just your personal opinion and slide a little bit of professional in there if you don't mind.
I love online learning. I've received one degree. I'm pursuing a second degree via online learning, as well as other classes that I've had to take. There is no difference to me in the quality of instruction that you can receive because you can either move at your own pace. You still have direct contact with the instructor. Again, as with anything you implement, it is with the people who are utilizing and the people who are implementing. And that's where the training comes in. That's where you have to teach about a flipped classroom model. Because even if you went to a brick and mortar school, there are classes that have a flipped model where the teacher records the lecture, records the work, puts all of that out there, and the student listens to videos, completes assignments, and the teacher is truly a facilitator in the room only if you need assistance. And if you don't, it's full speed ahead. And so that is where we're going anyway in education. Because again, when a student leaves us, unless they have a very traditional program, they have been offering online classes for at least a decade, if not more.
And that's something really to think about. You know, if we do continue this in-person, strictly only in-person classroom experience, will they be prepared for online university?
And my answer to that is no. Because if you're not self-motivated, whether I am in the classroom standing behind you saying, okay, love bug, come on, let's go. Let's do your work. That is no different than me being online, sending you a reminder, sending you an email, and checking in with you. If you're not going to do the work, sitting in front of me. You're not going to do the work at home. It's about intrinsic motivation.
Well, that's
and
true.
What are the parents whose students, whose children have special needs? You talked a little bit about that earlier. What are they supposed to do? What kind of questions should they be asking of the school? What should they be asking of the teachers in preparation for online learning in case that's their reality as a support?
So you have multiple levels to special education. And so I think that's something that people should be mindful of also. You have, and I'll just run through them really quickly. So you have inclusion. Mm-hmm. Those are students who are in a general education classroom who just have a support person come in and assist them and other struggling students. They have an IEP, an individual education plan, where they may receive 30 additional support minutes a week. And really that's them, a person coming in, checking in with them. How are you doing? Can I break this concept down? They're your general ed kid walking around. You wouldn't be able to point them out if you wanted to. Then you have students who are not in the general education classrooms as far as reading, writing, arithmetic, for lack of a better analogy. You have those students who are in like functional living skills classes where we teach you how to ride the bus, how to make a bed, how to prepare a meal for yourself, how to count money, basic life skills. So you have those students. Then you have the other students who are either in a TC unit, total communication, autism. You have students who are in ADL, which is activities of daily living. And those are your students who are either nonverbal, in wheelchairs, on feeding tubes, respirators, things of that nature. And so inclusion students are still receiving support. They're receiving support via online learning like the other students. Now, the other students in FLS and ADL are receiving direct instruction one-on-one with their teachers. They're receiving videos every day. They're receiving direct online instruction every day. So parents should ask, what is your support plan and how does online learning be able to mesh with their IEP? Are they still going to get the same amount of minutes of support? What does that support look like? Are you going to call them one-on-one? Are you going to read to them? Or are you going to modify their assignments? What does online learning look like in their IEP? How does that mesh?
So parents of developmentally challenged children need to get very involved in their education if we go online.
We have meetings every year. We have ARD meetings every year to discuss their IEP. Parents should be communicating with their students, case manager or special education teacher, and have an open rapport. If you have sought testing and sought assistance for your child, it doesn't stop there. It requires you to still continue a relationship to know what's going on.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Relationships is key.
And it doesn't stop just because they're online. And I think parents need to hear that consistently. And it means knowing who to call, when to call, how to reach those support services, even though the parents may be working and they have a caregiver there, or the parents may be working and they have grandparents or aunts and uncles supporting the children while they go to work if the kids are online.
They need to demand a schedule. They need to be very vocal when it comes to your child's education. It's almost like Burger King. You can have it your way. You just need to speak up and say, this is what my student who has an IEP or a 504 plan needs to be successful. And how can you best implement that with us being at home?
That sounds like great advice, Ashley. Yeah. So one more question for you.
Yes.
Let's say, again, we're going to go back to the in-classroom learning, right? So let's just say that we go back to the classroom in person. What do you think social distancing will change about in-classroom learning? And how does that look? Kind of describe you all's plan for social distancing while in the classroom.
Well, social distancing in the classroom, of course, we have to follow the CDC guidelines. We have done extensive planning, counting each classroom, measuring it out, counting how many desks can be in there, adjusting master schedules, adjusting class sizes, adjusting days of the week. Some students may come, as you've seen around the country, everyone is coming up with a model that best fits their situation, because when you move up in grades, you get larger schools. right? Because in elementary, you get so much attention. It's small schools. But then when you move to middle school and high school, you could get anywhere from 2,000 to 5,000 kids in a high school. High schools and education in this century were not designed for pandemics, right? So, you know, as we move to standardize education and be very inclusive and provide the greatest amount of resources and concentrate those resources. And so you didn't have these little pockets of one room schoolhouses, you know, where draining resources, so to speak. Let's put all of that in one place. But then again, when you do that, no one in our lifetime thought we would have another pandemic where we would have to alter education.
That's true.
And so even with every bit of extensive planning, education has been the same since Little House on the Prairie. The only difference is you've gotten bigger buildings and more breadth of knowledge of different subjects we offer, but the concept is still the same. Mm-hmm. And this is changing that.
Well, thank you, Ashley.
You are so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yes,
absolutely. These are a lot of good nuggets for our listeners and some pressing issues as we prepare for the fall to determine whether or not these kids will go back to school. We are confident in teachers like you in school districts like where you are, that you all will be prepared and ready. So thank you for your time.
And exactly. You are so welcome. And we thank you all for keeping the kids' safeties first. That's what's most important.
Absolutely.
Because when the kids leave you all, they got to come home to see us. And we don't want it, just like y'all don't want it.
And just remember, we're balancing state law, federal law, and local law. So a lot of the decisions that schools have to make are not our own. So I want parents to also keep that in mind as we close.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank You're you welcome. So much.
Thank
for
you
your
guys.
Feedback.
Have a great evening.
You
bye
too.
Bye.
You too.
Good conversation.
Mm-hmm. And we want to hear how you're thriving.
Right.
So
right.
Let us know. What's your definition for success? What does it take for you to thrive? What has been your experience? We want to hear that from you. So share it with us. So that we can learn from your experiences and other people, some of our other listeners and thrivers can learn as well.
Right. And look us up on Instagram, Facebook, and send us emails because we do want to hear your success stories. And, you know, we also want to hear those things that you may be struggling with because, you know, we may be young, but we've been through a whole lot of trials and tribulations that we can tell you how to overcome some of these humps. I'm just telling you.